This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foresight Fund Services, LLC.
Chinese growth slows amid historic population decline.
This is pretty profound in terms of whether or not China will vault into the ranks of the highest income countries and challenge the United States for being the biggest economy in the world. It's a lot harder to do that if your population is shrinking.
Plus, EVs surpass 10% market share worldwide. And when executives stop selling stock, could a big deal be ahead? It's Tuesday, January 17th. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. China's economy grew at one of its slowest rates in decades last year, expanding by just 3% in 2022, according to the National Bureau of Statistics. Separately, the Bureau reported today that the Chinese population shrank last year, marking the first decline since the early 1960s, when the country was devastated by famine. We'll have complete analysis of the latest Chinese GDP and population figures later in the show. We are exclusively reporting that activist investor Ryan Cohen has taken a stake in Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba and is pushing the company to increase stock buybacks. That is according to people familiar with the matter, who said that Cohen built a position worth hundreds of millions of dollars in the second half of last year. Journal reporter Joe Wallace says that despite Cohen's position being small in comparison to Alibaba's nearly $300 billion market cap, Cohen has a wide following among investors.
People familiar with the matter say that Mr. Cohen thinks the shares of the e-commerce giant are deeply undervalued. He thinks the company can achieve double-digit sales and higher free cash flow growth over the next 5 years. And in particular, he's pushing for Alibaba to boost its share buyback program. Its board had approved an expansion of the program by $15 billion to $40 billion and also expanded it through to March 2025. But people familiar with the matter say that Mr. Cohen thinks it needs to go further and that the program could be boosted by another $20 billion to roughly $60 billion.
Electric vehicles made up around 10% of auto sales for the first time last year. That is according to preliminary findings from research groups LMC Automotive and EVVolumes.com that track automotive sales. While EVs still make up a fraction of car sales in the U.S., their share of the total market is becoming substantial in Europe and China. Global sales of fully electric vehicles totaled around 7.8 million units last year, an increase of as much as 68% from the previous year. Microsoft plans to incorporate artificial intelligence tools like ChatGPT into all of its products and make them available as platforms for other businesses to build on. That is according to Chief Executive Satya Nadella, who was speaking Tuesday at a Wall Street Journal panel at the World Economic Forum's annual event in Davos, Switzerland. Microsoft was an early investor in OpenAI, the research lab behind the ChatGPT chatbot, which can answer questions, as well as image generator DALL-E 2, which turns language prompts into novel images. Microsoft has invested $1 billion in OpenAI and is in talks to put in even more, according to previous reporting by The Wall Street Journal. We have got a live blog tracking key headlines from Davos, including our interview with Satya Nadella on WSJ.com. And on tap for today, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Interactive Brokers, and United Airlines are among those set to release their quarterly earnings. Coming Companies are notoriously tight-lipped when it comes to sharing news about possible corporate deal-making. But Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Dummett says there might be some clues that investors can look to tell if a big deal lies ahead. And Ben joins us now with more on that. Hey, Ben, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, nice to be here. Thanks.
All right, Ben, so give us the details. What clues might investors be able to look for to see if deals are in the works?
The trick is to try to identify patterns in insider selling or insider buying, for example, and then determining when that stops. So if there's been a consistent period of insider selling, let's say, and then all of a sudden it stops, that's a clue that something might be afoot.
And are there some examples where you can maybe see this pattern?
Well, you know, one recent example was the Amgen bid for Horizon. If you looked at the selling activity by Horizon's insiders, for the prior 3 years, they had sold shares every month. And then at the end of July, beginning of August, the insider selling stops. And now the company had said that reflected the fact that the stock had fallen because of weak earning results. Fair enough. But then in November, there was still no selling and the stock actually rebounded after they reported strong earnings. So you'd think that maybe if there was nothing going on, that they would have resumed their selling activity. And if you looked at the filings that were subsequently filed with the SEC at the end of December about this deal, you'll see that the first takeover approach that they got was in October.
And finally, Ben, at the end of the day, how reliable of an indicator is this?
There's all sorts of reasons why people sell. I mean, they sell for tax reasons. They sell for estate planning reasons. A lot of directors, executives are paid in stock, and therefore they sell to realize the gains if there are gains to be had. And then in addition, there are plans that insiders can adopt for selling or buying of shares called 10b5-1 plans, which essentially allow insiders to sell or buy stock at predetermined dates in the future. And that's something that investors have to be cognizant if they're trying to use insider trading as an indicator of potential M&A, because under those plans, insiders can continue, for example, to sell shares even if they're in possession of non-public material information.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Dummett. Ben, thank you.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Coming up, we'll go behind China's latest GDP and population data to find out what slowing growth and a shrinking population could mean for the country's future. That's after the break.
This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foresight Fund Services, LLC.
As we mentioned earlier, Chinese economic growth fell to near historic lows in 2022, and the country's population declined for the first time in decades. And here now to help us analyze both of those readings is Wall Street Journal Asia economics reporter Jason Douglas in Singapore. Hey, Jason, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, my pleasure.
So let's start with the GDP reading that we just got for last year of 3%. What should we make of that?
Well, in Chinese terms, it's pretty bad, right? I mean, China usually grows a lot better than that. To put it in some long-run context, aside from 2020, the worst year of the pandemic, last year was the worst year for growth since 1976, when China was just coming out of the Cultural Revolution. So this is really the worst year for growth for a very long time. Behind it is COVID-19 and the government's zero COVID, zero tolerance strategy for the virus that they kept in place for most of the past 3 years that really got put to the test with Omicron when it arrived in China. And so if you remember what we had last year was just lockdown after lockdown in all these major cities. They screwed up global supply chains. People were kept at home in Shanghai for a couple of months. It just made economic activity and daily life really difficult in China. And so that's the big reason why we've seen this very weak reading for 2022.
On the other side of that, Jason, is it clear what the lifting of COVID restrictions may mean for the Chinese economy going forward?
Certainly people are optimistic that it's going to mean a pretty big rebound in economic activity this year. It'd certainly make life easier for Chinese people, we should say, of course, right? But in terms of the economy, yes, all these restrictions have been lifted. It's part of kind of a broader policy reset, funnily enough, the Chinese government has undertaken in an effort to revive growth this year. But economists are pretty confident that this year we're going to see growth of 5% or more, I think it's fair to say. In the very short term, it might be a bit tricky. We have still big waves of infection in China. In some big cities, those appear to be receding, but there's still big parts of the country where they've maybe yet to come, if you like. So most people kind of expect a bumpy first quarter and then the economy to kind of pick up steam from the second quarter onwards.
Let's shift to talking about today's population figures. Why exactly did China's population shrink last year?
That's right. So it fell by 850,000 is the estimate. So it's still about 1.4 billion, but 850,000 short of what it had been the previous year. The main reason is Chinese families aren't having enough children. The birth rate had been falling in China for a while. The one-child policy, I think, casts a long shadow on China. That was finally abandoned in 2016, I think. But even since then, people just aren't having that many babies. The reasons behind that are in some ways similar to the ones that are kind of familiar to many of us around the world. The pandemic certainly didn't help, right? But also there's just a lot of financial insecurity and economic insecurity that's persuading people not to have too many children.
Is Beijing watching this closely? And if so, what are they doing in response?
Certainly. I mean, in terms of the population, this is a big sort of long-term issue. It's something they have been aware of. They've tried various things over the past few years to try and encourage bigger families, up to and including cash payments for people to have more children. They've experimented also, I think, with longer spells of maternity leave, but to no real effect, it seems so far. And this is a big problem, right? I mean, China's working age population was already forecast to shrink. Something like one in five people in China is over 60. And you have to remember, this is a country that hasn't yet quite escaped middle income status. So this is pretty profound in terms of whether or not China will kind of vault into the ranks of the highest income countries and kind of challenge the United States someday for being the biggest economy in the world. It's a lot harder to do that if your population is shrinking, particularly your working age population. So it's a big economic challenge.
Finally, Jason, between these slowing growth figures we discussed earlier and the population shrinking last year, what does all of that mean for the world, economic growth beyond China?
Sure. So in the short term, if you think just about this year coming, the fact that China is going to be rebounding after this poor 2022 is probably quite a good thing for the global economy, because we are expecting a slowdown, if not an outright recession, in both Europe and the US. So China will probably be something of a locomotive for growth for the global economy this year. Longer term, if China slows, that's not great for the rest of the world. It's not great for economies that rely on it for trade. The decline in China's population last year does mean that India has now either overtaken China or will very soon overtake China as the world's most populous country. And there's certainly a growing interest about the rivalry between the two, is probably the best way to put it. I mean, they have a geopolitical rivalry, but there's also signs of kind of a growing economic rivalry. And there are companies like Apple moving iPhone production to India, these kind of things. There are these big economic shifts that are slowly going on. And this sort of head-to-head between India and China is definitely one to watch.
That was Wall Street Journal Asia economics reporter Jason Douglas in Singapore. Jason, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And finally, could the hottest new food trend be canned fish? Wall Street Journal reporter Yusuf Khan says that far from being merely a cheap kitchen cupboard staple, tins sporting colored labels and containing tuna or sardines in flavored olive oils or accompanied with sauces and spices have become a viral Gen Z sensation. And for proof, look no further than TikTok, where tinned fish date night videos and other related content are attracting tens of millions of views. And Khan says that the only question now is whether the suddenly trendy tinned fish industry can meet demand.
One company that's based in Alaska called Wildfish, they said that in the third quarter of 2022, they saw 66% growth in terms of sales, and that was largely through TikTok. Scout Canning, which is based in Vancouver, they saw their revenues go up by 82%. That's not a figure to be sniffed at. But most of these sort of artisan canneries, they clean the fish by hand. And so seeing this surge in demand is something they're just trying to meet, but it's not something they can necessarily do because, you know, they can draft in more people to help with the canning if certain products go popular. But ultimately, it is small scale production.
And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.